Hi there, I'm Celeste Headlee. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. We bring you conversations with brilliant women and some men who've reached success in their own fields and have specific, actionable steps you can take to move ahead in your own career and your personal life. And that's definitely true of Charmaine McClary. She's helped C-suite executives from Coca-Cola, DuPont, Humana, Starbucks, and T-Mobile, among many others, to become better communicators and stronger leaders. But her advice works just as well for entry-level workers. Charmaine led a session on communication at the 2019 Massachusetts Conference for Women. It was called Speak Up, Stand Out.
Can I ask you about that? Can I ask how you, I mean, look, stuff goes wrong. Are there things that you do to sort of get yourself together and get your mind clear when there's a catastrophe?
Yes. So the things that I do, one is I stop to make sure that I'm breathing. Because in the midst of calamity or something happening, we tend to stop breathing. At least I know I do. So it's one to get quiet. Make sure I'm breathing. If I can, take just a moment to just quiet myself and take a deep breath, a couple of them, and then put on lipstick, red lipstick. It will solve a lot of things for me.
I'm interested by the red lipstick, and I wonder why you think that works for you, because I would imagine, you know, there are certain pieces of clothing I can wear that just make me feel better. Why do you think that is?
It probably goes back to my young adulthood, because I would wear red lipstick, and I remember I didn't have it on one day. My mom said, God, you look different. And she said, the color's not in your face. And I thought, oh, and I remember I didn't have on the lipstick, and it's just been a part of me. It makes me feel, everything else can not look so great, but the lipstick makes me feel polished. Brings color to my face, and it's just sort of like that symbol of it's okay. So, and it's usually red, almost always.
Do you have a similar kind of routine before you step into like an important meeting, before you give a pitch to a client? Are there things that you do that make you fully prepared?
Yes. So one of the things that I do, and I share this many times with clients, is that, you know, if you're going to have a really important meeting or presentation and you call a friend and say, I just really need you to, you know, send positive vibes, hold me in light, whatever that might be. And it always feels great when the person tells you, you know, you're going to knock them dead or leaves you a voicemail message. One of the things that I do is I leave myself a voicemail message. I am a believer that the most powerful affirmation comes from us. To hear it in your voice is so powerful. It means that you have to internalize that. Because sometimes people will say, oh, I can't listen to myself, or I can't look at myself. But when it comes from the inside, when it comes from within, and you leave that voicemail message and you hear it, it is powerful beyond measure. And it sets me on the course, and it affirms what I know is the truth about who I am and how I do and how I need to show up. I also tell myself, not on that voicemail, but I get really clear about what do I want as an outcome? What do I want people to think, do, or feel as a result of my presenting or having that meeting? What do I want as an outcome? Because many times what we do is we begin with the facts or the data. But what do you want as an outcome? How do you want people to receive the information? And when you can think what I call is forensically, thinking, some might say backward, then I think about what information do I need to bring to the table so that I'm heard? How do I need to dress? Who do I need as an advocate? What pre-work do I need to do to set the stage so that I'm really heard and that I have the results that I'm looking for?
I feel like many of us can understand putting thought into your content, what you're wearing, etc. Give me a few more details about finding an advocate and having conversations with that advocate about what you want and need from them.
So I'm a believer in creating witnesses. And I say hard work without a witness is simply hard work, and who the hell needs that? A witness is someone, yes, a witness and an advocate are one and the same. And that is the person who many times has your back. So when you're going to deliver a presentation or enter a meeting, I think it's always important to ask yourself, what are the wins there? What are the potential wins? But also, what are the barriers? And where might there be pushback? And that advocate is someone who is willing to support and provide risk their political clout on your behalf in that room. This is the person who's smiling while you're speaking, or it's the person who has been able to seed the persons who are critical with positive feedback, either about this presentation, the information you're going to provide. That advocate may not be in the room. That advocate may, in fact, say, for example, Celeste, here are three persons that will be in the room that will not support this idea, and let me share with you why. So it could be their presence. It could be them, simply smiling, what I call the angel in the room. It could be them asking a question to deflect for your benefit. Again, person who's supporting what you do. And it can be the person who is just simply providing you with the intelligence about where the pushback may come so that you are better prepared when you walk in the room to address that.
How does the conversation go with that person? I mean, do you just explicitly say, hey, listen, I'm about to give a high stakes presentation. I'm hoping you'll be my witness, or can you help me? How do you approach that?
Well, I think there are a number of different ways to approach it. If it's a person who is really trusted and really does support what it is that you're about to do and they're going to be in the room, you might say to them, you know, I'm going to present this simply by asking them a question. Do you think I'm going to get any pushback? They might say, no, you aren't going to get any pushback at all. Great. Or I think you're going to get pushback, and it's going to be, this is the pushback. Can you help me to either counter that, or would you be willing, I'm going to ask you if you would support my idea in the room, if it's appropriate. So it can be direct, it can be indirect, it could simply be a question. Sometimes you can have an advocate in the room, but they don't even know that they're necessarily your advocate. By just asking them some questions in advance before you ever get in the room, they may share information with you that sets you up so that you are successful. But you can be very direct with the person, or asking them what would be the benefit for them if this presentation or information were to pass. Because you want to figure out what's in it for them as well. People want to be our cheerleaders, but we always need to be, what I say is, make it really the reciprocity, that there be mutually beneficial. So there are, again, a number of ways. It can be direct, implicit, simply questions, and you always thank the person if you are very direct with them in your request, even if they say no.
So, you know, even if it's not a presentation, it can be really difficult to get credit for your ideas just in a regular meeting. And that becomes more difficult if you are a person of color or a woman. And there's solid research showing that not only are women of color least likely to get opportunities to speak, but also what they say is least likely to be remembered. It's very well documented that ideas that women put forward are dismissed until they are rephrased by a man, in which case he takes credit for it. How does one do that? And I wonder, this leads back just to the advocate, because there are cases that I have seen in which an advocate who becomes aware of this can be the one that says, I agree with Charmaine, right? I agree with Celeste's idea. How does one handle that kind of societal, systemic dismissal of you as a person?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because if we go back to one of the debates with Elizabeth Warren, she said something and then it was rephrased, I think it was by Biden. But it's called, Harvard Business Review came with the term he-peating. When you say something, when a woman says something and then a man says the same thing and people go, oh my God, that was brilliant. It really can put you in a major pissosity because you're thinking, I just said that. So again, you can have an advocate in the room that says, Celeste, excellent idea. I absolutely agree with you. You can also provide an email as a follow-up to the group that you were meeting with. And you can say, here are three things that we can do to move this particular initiative forward. So even though somebody else repeated it and may have gotten the credit in the room, that person likely was not thinking about what are the next steps. It's an excellent idea, and I'd love to have, and if you have any additional questions or want my support in leading this effort, let me know. So that's another way of being able to ensure that it's documented, because it's not it would not be appropriate, and it would seem really defensive to say, but that was my idea. How dare you? Then you look like the angry woman in the room. Or you can simply say, Mark, absolutely, I agree with you. I agree. It's a brilliant idea. As I was saying, and then you come out, then you identify what is the follow-up to that right there in the meeting. And then at some time, it might be important for you to actually approach that person, because they're usually what I call are regular culprits, people that do it regularly. And you can simply say to them, can you share with me what's going on here?
You mean in private, outside of the meeting?
Yes, in private, outside. Thank you for that clarification. Yes, in private, outside. I'm a little confused here, and I'd love to have you clarify this for me.
This is difficult for some people, though, right? I mean, you must encounter them in your role as a coach. There are some people who feel nervous about taking up space. And being assertive that way.
Yes, absolutely. I always say that if you are female, you were probably taught to be a good girl, and a good girl is not seen or heard. In fact, that means she's been really good. You don't hear a peep out of her. And so we've been inculcated for that. And yes, it may be difficult, but as anything, if you want to be successful at being heard and being seen and not being invisible, it requires practice. It means that you've got to put your foot out there and practice. And practice will lead you to a level of comfort and a level of success. And you can start in small ways and build up, but it requires your input. It requires you to have to take action. Wishing it away will not make it go away. It requires you to make the choice. I want something different. And what do I need to do to have a different outcome? You can also ask people for help. So if you have an advocate, or you have someone who thinks that you're really sharp, you know, that you are have potential, ask them to support you in your visibility.
And how early do we have to be thinking about this? I mean, you coach executives and C-suite denizens, but I imagine many of the people listening to you right now are not in the C-suite. They are secretaries. They are administrative assistants. They are entry level. Do they have to be worrying about this, or do you wait until you're a manager?
So one of the things that people say to me, and it just happened last week, they said, where were you all my career? I could have used this 25 years ago. So there's not any too early. Your first day in the workforce, this is important. And in order to get to the more senior level, if that's what you aspire to have, it means starting early. I believe that it starts actually before your first day of really sort of profiling who are people that are successful, that you admire or that inspire you. And sort of creating your own vision board. What does it look like when people are successful? What does it look like when people are heard? What's their body language? How do they speak? How do they dress? look at people that are in your community that have been successful and asking them, being very curious and asking them, you know, how did it happen? What was the one challenge you had? How did you overcome that challenge? So it can start before your first day at work. Really looking at all of your surroundings, and there is information, intelligence, just ripe for the picking. And if you are a administrative assistant, a secretary, you have the voice, you have the ear of the of persons of influence in your organization. And I always say that people have power everywhere, so you don't not a title is not required. So you can leverage that and leverage it early. Understand when you walk into the corporation, really observe who gets listened to, why are they listened to? What do they do that's different than other people? The people that aren't listened to, how do they show up? How do they speak? Why don't people listen to them? And also, it's important to let people know of your intention. When you're starting, say, I'm starting here, but I'm really excited about a really brilliant career. And what I'm looking from you is I'm looking for your partnership and your coaching and your help in my success, because that will be essential for me. And it's going to be essential in order for me to be a great contributor on this team and in this organization. And I'm asking you to partner with me in that success. One of the things that's also important as you're speaking about people of color is that people of color and women, but particularly people of color, get the least amount of feedback. So if you say, can you share with me, they'll say, well, you know, you are just doing X. And it's usually not specific. People will say, well, you know, you understand, don't you? No, actually I don't. Can you be specific with me and sharing with me a time when I did X? What does that look like? Because when we make assumptions on what that person is thinking, we're doing the same thing. So you want to ask people for feedback, let them know that you're willing to hear feedback without being defensive, and you're asking for examples. And what that does is it creates a mutual level of accountability. And you can say to the person, let's say you have a particular mannerism and you want to make a, you want to shift that, you want to change that mannerism, is saying that when I do that, let me know. If you can give me some real-time coaching, that would be great. Also, I'm asking you is when I'm doing something really great or successful, I want you to let me know that as well. So that way I can begin to remember what does that look like and how to do more of it.
So what have we missed? What is the thing you end up telling everyone? Like the piece of advice or the area for improvement that nearly all of your clients end up needing to hear about?
There are a couple of things. One is I'm a believer that you need to define yourself because others' definition of you will inevitably be inadequate. So you need to be really clear about who you are, because you will get feedback, you will get criticism throughout your career, and you've got to know who you are. What is the root of that tree? The second is I'm a believer in getting feedback and asking for it because people don't like to volunteer it. And there are three questions to ask yourself. How do I see myself? How do other people see me, and how do I want to be seen? Then you can identify what's the gap between that so that you can work to ensure that people see you the way you want to be seen. The next is I have a process I've created called Executive Success Principles. And what I did some 20 plus years ago was I interviewed CEOs and senior level executives of global 500 companies, and I asked them why were they more successful than other people. And they said, Charmaine, it's not because I'm smarter than others. It's because of how I leverage the information that I bring to the table, how I leverage its value. And the first of those principles is communicate the vision, because leaders communicate the vision and not the task.
Can you give me an example of that? Give me an example of vision versus task.
Okay. So if I ask my assistant, what did she do while I was traveling? And she says, well, Charmaine, what I did is I filed all those papers you requested. That's a task. if she says what I've done is I've streamlined our filing system so that it allows us to have access to clients easier, that's value. That's the outcome of the work you've done. So it's value-based as opposed to task-based.
I get you.
So if you have a watch, a former CEO of Denny's said, Charmaine, this is great because I don't want my team to tell me how the watch is made. I want them to tell me what is the value of that watch. Then you can tell me how it's made. So it's starting with the big picture, because when you have vision, you can have engagement, then you can influence people. You can create a community. You can have transformation, but you've got to have a vision first. You have to know where there is. The second is by speaking in headlines. A headline seduces the eye and the ear. So how do you need to articulate that so that it captures the attention and the essence of what it is you want to deliver? I'll use myself as an example. One of the things that happens when people ask you, what do you do? Many times people say, I'm an executive coach. And I don't say that first because that's just simply a title that does not articulate my value. If I say I help smart people communicate the big picture and get promoted, I provide executive coaching to CEOs of global 500 companies. I just articulated my value. In fact, I could even take the executive coaching part out altogether. It's the value of what I do. Smart people work with me, communicate the big picture, and get promoted. I have a client who used to say, I'm senior director of sales and marketing. I said, you work for a company that has 49,000 employees worldwide. How many senior directors do you think are in this organization? That does not distinguish you. So what is the value of what you do? And as we began to talk and pull it apart, she was responsible for the fastest growing market segment of her organization, that a campaign that was going for that year. That shifted how she saw herself, how other people saw her, and that was communicating the vision and speaking in headlines. The third is the three must make points. Many times what we do is we communicate about what we know and what's important to us and not what's important to our audience. So three must make points, three questions. Why should I listen? Why should your audience listen? What's in it for them? And what do you want them to do about it? And if we begin with those, that shifts the narrative, the conversation. And it helps us to substantiate our vision. The fourth is creating witnesses. I say hard work without a witness is simply hard work, and who needs that? You want people to know whether you've done it with vision, with strategy. You want people that are supporting you. And part of it is you think about what's the value proposition for them. Why should they be your advocate? Why should they be your witness? But creating witnesses so you're not invisible and you're not a well-kept secret. And the fifth is not auditioning for the part. You've been hired because of your insight, because of what you bring to the table. And I say the meeting you need to attend is the meeting that cannot take place without your brilliance or your insight. So come to the table, prepare to share, prepare to contribute. Particularly for women and people of color, a quick example is one of my clients would come to the executive team meeting. And one day the CEO said to her, when I bring you here to these meetings to attend, I'm bringing you here because you have an insight. But if you remain silent in the meeting, we're not able to leverage that. And you're impeding progress, innovation, and our success. I want your insight. So coming to the table to do that. And the sixth is embodying your message, making sure you're walking, talking, and acting the part. Need to be congruent in how you show up. So it really allows people to step into their spotlight. Because again, you're defining who you are. It's your definition of who you are. And you're bringing all that to the table.
And then you'll no longer be
invisible. You will no longer be invisible. And you don't ask for, you know, the other thing about not auditioning for the part is don't ask for permission. Leaders do not ask for permission. They do it. sort of like the Nike slogan, you simply do it. If you're asking for permission to share an idea, asking for permission, I expect my leaders to come to the table with a perspective. Not ask me if they have permission to do it. And many times women and people of color will say, well, do you mind if I say? Well, I mind if you don't say. So those are some of the pieces that are really essential for success, career success. And all of my clients have leveraged each of the things that I've spoken about for them to have a clear trajectory to the top.
Charmaine McClary, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
This has been wonderful. I appreciate the time and your interest. And I'm hoping that people will be able to hear this and really make a difference in their career and in their life.
I hope this is the very same thing. Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom. Thank you so much.
Charmaine McClary is a C-suite advisor, and for two decades, 98% of her clients were promoted within 18 months. So she knows what she's talking about. If you enjoyed this conversation, I hope you will like, subscribe, maybe write a review on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcasts. That helps other people find us. And of course, be sure to check out more offerings from one of the conferences for women near you. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation, drawing more than 45,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and Silicon Valley. I'm Celeste Headley. This has been Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thanks for listening. Be kind and be well.